Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. This is Book 10, Chapter 13. On the 17th of August, Rostov and Ilyin, accompanied by Lavrushka, who had just returned from captivity, and by an hussar orderly, left their quarters at Yankovo, 10 miles from Bogacharovo, and went for a ride to try a new horse Ilyin had bought and to find out whether there was any hay to be had in the villages. For the last 3 days, Bogacharovo had lain between the two hostile armies, so that it was as easy for the Russian rear guard to get to it as for the French vanguard. So Rostov, as a careful squadron commander, wished to take such provisions as remained at Bogacharovo before the French could get them. Rostov and Ilyin were in the merriest of moods. On the way to Bogacharovo, a princely estate with a dwelling house and a farm, where they hoped to find many domestic serfs and pretty girls, they questioned Lavrushka about Napoleon and laughed at his stories, and raced one another to try Ilyin's horse. Rostov had no idea that the village he was entering was the property of that very Bolkonsky who had been engaged to his sister. Rostov and Ilyin gave rein to their horses for a last race along the incline before reaching Bogacharovo, and Rostov, outstripping Ilyin, was the first to gallop into the village street. "You're first," cried Ilyin, flushed. "Yes, always first, both on the grassland and here," answered Rostov, stroking his heated Donets horse. "And I'd have won on my Frenchie, Your Excellency," said Lavrushka from behind, alluding to his shabby cart horse. "Only I didn't wish to mortify you." They rode at a foot pace to the barn, where a large crowd of peasants was standing. Some of the men bared their heads, others stared at the new arrivals without doffing their caps. Two tall old peasants with wrinkled faces and scanty beards emerged from the tavern, smiling, staggering, and singing some incoherent song, and approached the officers. "Fine fellows," said Rostov, laughing. "Is there any hay here?" "And how like one another," said Ilyin. "A most merry company," sang one of the peasants with a blissful smile. One of the men came out of the crowd and went up to Rostov. "Who do you belong to?" he asked. "The French," replied Ilyin jestingly, "and here is Napoleon himself," and he pointed to Lavrushka. "Then you are Russians?" the peasant asked again. "And is there a large force of you here?" said another, a short man, coming up. "Very large," answered Rostov. "But why have you collected here?" he added. "Is it a holiday?" "The old men have met to talk over the business of the commune," replied the peasant, moving away. At that moment, on the road leading from the big house, two women and a man in a white hat were seen coming towards the officers. "The one in pink is mine, so keep off," said Ilyin, on seeing Danyusha running resolutely towards him. "She'll be ours," said Lavrushka and Ilyin to Ilyin, winking. "What do you want, my pretty?" said Ilyin with a smile. "The princess ordered me to ask your regiment and your name. This is Count Rostov, squadron commander, and I am your humble servant." "Ko-o-umpany," roared the tipsy peasant with a beatific smile, as he looked at Ilyin, talking to the girl. Following Danyushka, Alpatish advanced to Rostov, having bared his head while still at a distance. May I make bold to trouble your honour," said he respectfully, but with a shade of contempt for the youthfulness of this officer, and with a hand thrust into his bosom. "My mistress, daughter of General-in-Chief Prince Nicholas Bolkonsky, who died on the 15th of this month, finding herself in difficulties owing to the boorishness of these people," he pointed to the peasants, "asks you to come up to the house. Won't you, please, ride on a little farther," said Alpatish, with a melancholy smile. "As it is not our convenient It is not convenient in the presence of..." He pointed to the two peasants who kept as close to him as horse flies to a horse. "Ah, Alpatych. Ah, Yakov Alpatych. Grand. Forgive us for Christ's sake, eh?" said the peasants, smiling joyfully at him. Rostov looked at the tipsy peasants and smiled. "Or perhaps they amuse your honour," remarked Alpatych with a staid air, as he pointed at the old men with his free hand. "No, there's not much to be amused at here," said Rostov, and rode on a little way. "What's the matter?" he asked. "I make bold to inform your honour that the rude peasants here don't wish to let the mistress leave the estate, and threaten to unharness her horses so that though everything has been packed since morning, Her Excellency cannot get away." "Impossible," exclaimed Rostov. "I have the honour to report to you the actual truth," said Alpatych. Rostov dismounted, gave his horse to the orderly, and followed Alpatych to the house, questioning him as to the state of affairs. It appeared that the princess's offer of corn to the peasants the previous day, and her talk with Dron and at the meeting, had actually had so bad an effect that Dron had finally given up the keys and joined the peasants, and had not appeared when Alpatych sent for him, and that in the morning, when the princess gave orders to harness for her journey, the peasants had come in a large crowd to the barn and sent word that they would not let her leave the village, that there was an order not to move, and that they would unharness the horse. Alpatych had gone out to admonish them, but was told it was chiefly Karp who did the talking, Dron not showing himself in the crowd, that they could not let the princess go, that there was an order to the contrary, but that if she stayed, they would serve her as before and obey her in everything. At the moment when Rostov and Ilyin were galloping along the road, Princess Mary, despite the dissuasions of Alpatych, her nurse and the maids, had given orders to harness and intended to start, but when the cavalrymen were espied, they were taken for Frenchmen, the coachman ran away, and the women in the house began to wail. "Father, benefactor, God has sent you," exclaimed deeply moved voices as Rostov passed through the anteroom. Princess Mary was sitting, helpless and bewildered, in the large sitting room when Rostov was shown in. She could not grasp who he was and why he had come, or what was happening to her. She saw his Russian face, and by his walk and the first words he uttered, recognized him as a man of her own class. She glanced at him with her deep, radiant look, and began speaking in a voice that faltered and trembled with emotion. This meeting immediately struck Rostov as a romantic event. A helpless girl, overwhelmed with grief, left to the mercy of coarse, rioting peasants, and what a strange fate sent me here. What gentleness and nobility there is in her features and expression, thought he as he looked at her and listened to her timid story. When she began to tell him that all this had happened the day after her father's funeral, her voice trembled. She turned away, and then, as if fearing he might take her words as meant to move him to pity, looked at him with an apprehensive glance of inquiry. There were tears in Rostov's eyes. Princess Mary noticed this and glanced gratefully at him with the radiant look which caused the plainness of her face to be forgotten. "I cannot express, Princess, how glad I am that I happen to ride here and am able to show my readiness to serve you," said Rostov, rising. "Go when you please, and I give you my word of honour that no one shall dare to cause you annoyance, if only you will allow me to act as your escort." And bowing respectfully, as if to a lady of royal blood, he moved towards the door. Rostov's deferential tone seemed to indicate that though he would consider himself happy to be acquainted with her, he did not wish to take advantage of her misfortunes to intrude upon her. Princess Mary understood this and appreciated his delicacy. "I am very, very grateful to you," she said in French, "but I hope it was all a misunderstanding and that no one is to blame for it." She suddenly began to cry. "Excuse me," she said. Rostov, knitting his brows, left the room with another low bow. All right, there we go, another chapter down. And it seems like young Rostov is to the rescue. He is completely at the service of Maya and is going to help her escape. I still don't 100% understand why the serfs are so angry at her for offering them the corn. It doesn't really make sense. I mean, it seems like such a nice gesture. And I know that they were implying from the gesture that she was trying to re-enslave them in some way. So they were really offended by the offer of food. But still, it doesn't really make sense that they're so offended that they're trying to trap her in her house. But regardless, that's what they've done. And luckily, Rostov, by fate, has strolled into their estate. And he seems pretty swept up with Maya. Pretty smitten by her. Kansas 57 says, does this chapter foretell of a potential romantic relationship between Maya and Rostov? How might this work with the history between their siblings? It did seem rather that way, didn't it? It seemed like Rostov was at least attracted to Maya. I don't know if the feeling's mutual, but he on his side, definitely, I think. Unless this is another one of those cases. Sometimes in this book, there's like old language, like when he says it was romantic, maybe that had some different meaning back in the day, or different implications, I should say. JMama8779 said, poor Sonia, I didn't see this one coming. DeFleury said she'll have to take Mary's suitor in return, except I think the only boys Mary's ever met are Anatole and Boris. Is it too late to call Dolokhov back? Rory Lenigan said, oh, the vapid Boris is already married off to that hipster Julie. Anatole and Dolokhov, brigands, both of them. Whatever happened to Denisov? He was an alright guy. I hope there's a continuing romance between Nikolai and Maya for both of their sakes. I think it's a pretty good match too. The question of whatever happened to Denisov is a good question. Denisov is the guy who died in the hospital, right? In that war hospital. Was that Denisov that went there, or have I got that mixed up? I'm going to quickly Google it. I think that's him. That's the guy that was in the military hospital. That's the last time we saw him. I assumed he died because that was a grim place. DeFleury said, this was a great chapter. I enjoyed the soldiers bantering about their horse race and meeting the crazy peasants. And then these two idiots don't even know they're already related, or nearly were. I'm not generally the biggest fan of Rostov, but at this point I'm in favour of anything that gets Princess Mary out of the nunnery. I was impressed with how she stepped up after the old man died. Why on earth won't the peasants just leave her alone and let her leave? I'm missing something here. Corker Street said, it lent me a sad feeling that perhaps they saw promise in French occupation, more than in their habitual masters. It would explain why they had scruple to take landlord grain. I don't know that any such thing is true, though. Did the peasantry see the war as a liberation? Roy Lenigan said, apparently the Cossacks were ransacking villages left behind by Russians as the latter retreated. The French were sending ahead leaflets telling the villages, or musiks, that they would allow them to stay on their land, or the land they were working for their masters. So this makes it seem like staying to be occupied by the French was a better option for the musiks than leaving and having their houses and land destroyed. I'm not so sure about why they wouldn't let Maya leave or why they wouldn't take the grain. Stratton Love said, I've been MIA because I fell behind. Thank God for the podcast. Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for the shout out. At this point, Andre and Natasha aren't a thing, so will it be an issue if Maya and Rostov are paired? It might be an issue if Andre and Natasha decide to get back together and Maya and Rostov are a couple too. The whole marrying your in-laws is probably frowned upon, like cousins marrying. You know, I don't know, like, is it so weird if I marry my brother's wife's sister? Is that what it would be? You know? Siblings marrying other siblings, it's kind of weird, like keeping it in the family a bit, but you're still not marrying anyone that you're related to by blood, so I don't think it's quite as bad as cousins marrying. I think the pairing might work, this is Stratton Love continuing, but I'm not sure if you'd be getting the same kind of chemistry you'd see in Andre and Natasha. It's more like Rostov can learn a lot from Maya, and Maya is happy with anyone as long as she's with someone and can raise a family of her own. Kansas 57 said, I don't think Natasha and Andre are likely to get back together at this point. Yeah, I would agree with that, actually. My thought was that it might cause some sibling strife if Rostov and Maya are a couple. I love the relationships between Maya and Andre and Natasha and Rostov, and fear those will be destroyed if a romantic relationship happens between Maya and Rostov. Though, given enough time, it may not be an issue at all, especially if Natasha and Andre are with other people, which seems possible as I don't think Maya and Rostov will happen quickly. I also think this might be a good pairing. Rostov might be able to draw Maya out of her shell a bit, and clearly Maya has an emotional effect on Rostov. They might just balance each other out really well, though I still think Pierre and Maya would be a great couple. Wow, okay. Yeah, I think Rostov and Maya might be a good couple. I thought there was an age difference there. I always think as Maya is older, but I don't know how much older she is. Older than Rostov. I think she's a little bit older. It was interesting that Rostov found her really quite attractive, because she's never really described as attractive. It's always said she's got pretty eyes. Her eyes are attractive, but she's never described as being attractive herself. But Rostov, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and Rostov seems to find her beautiful. Who Was Once Delight said, I feel like Nikolai's attraction to both Maya and Sonya has more to do with his being near to them at the time and their being slightly off limits. I like how Nikolai has grown, but I think he, like his father, is still pretty immature when it comes to his immediate wants. Like, he still buys new horses in spite of the family's financial woes. While I want a happy ending for Maya, I don't think Nikolai is serious enough for her, and I don't think she would hold his attention, though the Rostovs would really benefit from another crack at the Bolkonsky money. Yeah, that's exactly kind of what I was thinking too. Like, he seems smitten by her now, but I feel like he would get sick of her, wouldn't he? In the same way, although his love for Sonya has grown, hasn't it? We saw it kind of grow with throughout the chapters. But like you said, it's like they need to be there with him for him to feel loyal to them. Otherwise, you know, he's busy with his proving himself as a man in the army type stuff that he does. Kalea said, if Rostov and Maya end up together, I'll feel so bad for Sonya. The only positive side to this is that it would take care of the Rostov's financial troubles. I'm sure his family would be very happy with that match. Well, you know, oh, actually, I don't know. I like Sonya too. I like Sonya and Maya. Who do I want to end up with Nikolai Rostov? Look, I'm such a sucker. I'm always talking about what a cop-out it is to put a love triangle in a book, you know. But then as soon as an author does it, I'm like, oh, which team am I on? Team Jacob? You know, it's so irresistible, isn't it? It's a cheap shot, Tolstoy, but you got us. We're sucked in. We need to know what happens next. Anyway, that's going to do us for today. Thanks very much for listening. We'll find out what happens in this love triangle next time.